This is Jim Inkster. Join me today, and we'll talk with Public Service Commissioner Foster Campbell. In 2007, he lost a race for governor to Bobby Jindal. Bobby Jindal last week in Politico said that it's time for the Republican Party to stop the bedwetting and start kicking around the other guys. Is he talking about people like Foster Campbell? We'll get Commissioner Campbell's response to this, and this is also a big week for the PSC, a vote coming on solar power. So Foster Campbell, as always, has much to discuss with us today on the show. Also today, we'll talk with Drew Boyd, former Fortune 500 business advisor. He, in his latest book, Inside the Box, tackles the issue of creativity. We'll talk with Drew Boyd about what he believes creativity stems from. All this, now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Our numbers are 877-217-5757, wherever you are. If you're dialing locally, 297-5633, you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest is Public Service Commissioner Foster Campbell. For 25 years, he served in the Louisiana legislature. He was elected to the PSC in 2002, and he remains one of the most vocal people on the five-member commission. It's a big week for the Public Service Commission, and we'll find out why. But we'll also talk with Foster Campbell about other issues, including the man he lost to for governor in 2007, Governor Bobby Jindal. What did you think of the governor's words last week that the GOP needs to, quote, stop the bedwetting and start kicking around the other guys, Foster Campbell?
I don't know. I read some of that stuff, and you know, I think Bobby Jindal, as the train's left him on the national stage, and he's doing his best to try to jump on the caboose and hold on a national stage. And some of this stuff is just silly to talk about. Quit bedwetting and put on your big boy pants. I mean, you know, here's a little guy that he's the last person in the world ought to talk about big boy pants. You know, ooh, it's just rough. When you see him and you hear him and he talks about being tough and macho, he'll let somebody else do that. He really should, and he ought to talk about what he should be talking about is what we're doing in Louisiana and what we're doing to get our state out of tied with Mississippi for everything that's bad. And, you know, what are we doing for the schools and all? They're all in a panic about cut. They don't know if they're going to exist, and cutting professors and professors losing. I heard Mr. Jindal over in Monroe about a month ago. I went over to a deal where he spoke, and he said, you know, the outward migration of people in Louisiana has stopped. He stopped that, basically. Well, I'm confused because one time I thought we had 8 congressmen, and now we have 6. And that's on population, I believe. And if we're doing so good, why do we have 6 now instead of 8? And it's not all because of Katrina. It's been happening. And I don't see any reversal of outward migration. I think the people young people are still leaving Louisiana. There's not a lot of good jobs here. And surely, whether he's got 2 or 3 years left, quit thinking about his personal politics and start thinking about the people of Louisiana that he swore that he would take care of and do the best job he could. You know, when you start talking about put on your big boy pants and stop bedwetting, I don't know who wrote that for him, but it's silly.
And you don't think he wrote it?
Oh no! Surely he wouldn't do it. But when you see Bobby Jindal and he's talking about put on your big boy pants, it's sort of tough to realize. You know, here's a guy, and I served with 4 governors. I served with Edwards. I served with Treen. I served with Romer, and I served with Mike Foster. And I never saw any of those guys. They would come to those committee meetings, and they would have a bill that they were for, and they would argue about it and do the, you know, trying to get you to vote for it. This fella sends other people to committees. He doesn't even talk to them. He doesn't talk to, he doesn't try to communicate with getting his way done. And the session this time, he wanted to raise sales taxes, which I thought was a terrible idea. A little heat, he quit and ran. Said, "Well, y'all take it, and do what you want to with it." So I don't know. I'm disappointed because we have so many problems in Louisiana, and surely he ought to be worried about the state of Louisiana instead of going all over the country. what really troubled me a little bit, I thought Romney was a nice fella. You know, I didn't vote for Romney, but I thought he was a nice fella. Of the Republicans, I thought he had the most sense, and he was sort of reasonable. And Jindal was doing everything he could to get up to Romney. And then when Romney loses, 2 weeks after that, he's criticizing the guy. How do you do that? I mean, if you're for a guy 100%, you want to be vice president, you're saying he's the best guy since sliced bread, and then 2 weeks later, he's blaming Romney for losing. I thought Romney was a nice guy. I thought he was reasonable. He certainly was a successful business person. Maybe some folks didn't like him. I understand that, but I didn't think he was a bad guy. But, I mean, for you to hug up to him and want to be his best friend and begging mm-hmm. him to choose you for vice president, 2 weeks after the election, he wants to jump on him and talk about how crazy the guy was. Or, you know, it's amazing to me this guy doesn't have any more loyalty. He looks like it's just absolutely Bobby Jindal's agenda to try to get on a national level, and he's worried to death after reading this. I'm convinced he's worried to death that the Rubios and the Christies and the Jeb Bushes are getting way ahead of him, and he's just like a little dog trying to catch up with a car barking. That's all it reminds me of.
Well, there are places in Bossier Parish where if you told a man to put his big boy pants on and stop the bedwetting, you'd end up in an alley a few minutes after those remarks.
Well, I don't think he want to do that. That's why it's so ironic that Bobby Jindal wants to talk about putting on your big boy pants and stop wetting the bed. Certainly he didn't write that. I mean, I don't know how he let that go, knowing Mr. Jindal. And,
I think he wrote every word.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Well, he's writing. It's not actions. I don't think if somebody asked Mr. Jindal to, I hope it never happens, but if they ask him to put up or be quiet, I think he, you know, I don't think he'd hang around too long. But that's me personally, you know. And he's a smart fella, and he wants to do what he wants to, but his ambition has overcome his common sense. He's just so ambitious to try to be vice president, and the train's left, and he's just like a little dog barking at a car trying to get some attention.
All right, you got some folks fired up. 297-5633 for the always outspoken Foster L. Campbell, Jr., Public Service Commissioner, and he's talking to us today, I think, from your office in Bossier Parish. Lynn and Melrose. Lynn, good morning. You're on with Commissioner Campbell.
Good morning, Jim and Commissioner. Mr. Campbell, back in February, you wrote a very thoughtful letter to Val Mamillion, the head of the America's Wetlands Foundation, asking him to see if he couldn't use his influence to broker some kind of a deal between the Louisiana administration and Obama administration on oil and gas and the damage they've done to the coast. Did he ever reply to your letter?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Jim might remember the letter. Mr. Al Million is the spokesman for Save Louisiana or the Coast or whatever. And that's sponsored by the oil companies. So, you know, I wrote him a letter and said, you know, since you got that.
Didn't you write it to King?
King Milling.
King Milling, yeah.
Yeah, that's the chairman or whatever he is. Yeah, I wrote him a letter and said, you know, if y'all are so worried about the coast, why don't you ask the oil companies to pay for some of the damage they caused? Now, that it's just good common sense, and everybody knows it's common sense. Everybody you talk to says that makes sense. But what doesn't make sense, in one way, makes perfectly good sense, because these politicians, our congressmen, and both of our United States senators, both of them, Mr. Vitter and Ms. Landrieu, do not want to touch the big oil companies. They want to go to Washington, and they want to say, we're going to get the money to save the coast. But why don't they just call down in Houston and tell those fellows to come on over to Baton Rouge, we're going to have a little meeting, and yes, we're going to ask the president for some money and to fix the coast, because the government shares in some of the responsibility. But you guys are going to have to pay for a little bit, too. But they don't want to ask the oil companies, because the oil companies put up all the money to get people reelected, and they're scared to death of asking the oil companies to do the right thing. How simple is that? And how much sense does that make? If someone runs into your fence in your backyard, you have a nice fence, and tears it down, the first thing you're going to do is say, who is your insurance carrier? We want you to fix the fence back. We know positively know that oil companies' offshore activity caused a lot of erosion in the state of Louisiana. But do we ask them to pay for it? Would Mr. Jindal ask Exxon or Chevron or Shell to pay for any of the erosion? Absolutely not. But he would rather talk about big boys and bedwetting. Why don't he be a big boy and put on his big boy pants and ask the Exxon people and the Chevron and the Mobil people all to have, and the all the people out in the Gulf to have a meeting at the mansion. He's got the mansion. Have a meeting and pay for their fair share. But Mr. Jindal wants to talk about big boy pants, but he don't want to put them on, I guarantee you. He doesn't have them on. He has, look, I don't want to say anything because you guys put up a lot of money, and you won't be for me, and it's all politics, and I'm going to tell people I love Louisiana, and I'm all for Louisiana. When he gets down to it, I can't fight the people with the big money. That's it.
Now, there are stories going around now that the governor, who's on a 64-parish tour, may be weighing the prospect of jumping in the U.S. Senate race against Mary Landrieu. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what he. I have no idea. I thought they had a. I thought they had somebody down there running. What's his name? Cassidy.
Yes, he's running.
Mr. Cassidy's running. I don't know what.
But he's running with David Vitter's campaign apparatus, not Bobby Jindal's. Vitter and Jindal don't care for one another. So
I don't know. The last numbers I saw on Jindal, he was upside down. You know, in other words, he had more negative than positive. I saw that not too long ago.
Yeah, that was in Bernie Pinsonet's poll.
Oh no, this was another poll from a very credible pollster. Not saying Mr. Pinsonet isn't, but I mean, I saw another national pollster that I know a little bit about, and he was upside down. So I don't know what he's going to run for, but he ought to get back here in Louisiana and try to do the job that the people elected him to do. That's the silly thing he's doing, running all over the country, yip-yapping. He wants to be the vice president, or he wants to do this and that. When we got people right here in Louisiana that are hurting, you know, it's almost like, you know, we don't live in Connecticut where people make $80,000 a year, and most of them have a college degree. We live in Louisiana where the average salary household is about 40-something thousand. And that's almost poverty level for the United States of America, and that's lots of people in our that work hard every day. They make $40,000 to $45,000 combined family income. Those people are having hell, and here we are running around the country talking about putting on your big boy pants and all that kind of stuff and bedwetting. How silly is that, man? Come on back down to Louisiana and take care of the people that you swore that you were going to do, and you were so interested in being. Governor, now you want to be president, and you know, the train's left. Get a hold of yourself and do a good job. I think if you want to be vice president, if you had this state in sterling condition, you'd have a hell of a lot better chance of being, and when some of the statistics staring you in the face are the same as they always
were. All right,
well,
Melissa says, chides me and you, Commissioner Campbell, for a She says, I've criticized the governor. I don't know that I have for traveling the country, and I'm not praising him for his 64-parish tour of Louisiana. She says he can't do anything right in your judgment. I think it's good that he's making this 64-parish tour, Commissioner Campbell.
Yeah, well, that's what he's supposed to do. I mean, you know, you're supposed to get around in your district. I'm not saying anything about what I've done, but since I've been elected to the Public Service Commission, I represent 24 parishes. I've had over 150 public meetings. That's your job. I mean, that's good he's doing it, but that's no big deal. That's what he's supposed to do. You're supposed to go to all the parishes, and you're supposed to, but you need to do that all the time and get out all the jet airplanes and the Lear jets and trying to raise money and then criticizing. This state still has a lot of Democratic folks here, a lot of them. And why criticize them? Why put a finger in their eye all the time? But then when it comes election time, you want them all to vote for you. You want them to vote for you. It sort of reminds me of what he did with Romney. Romney was a great, wonderful guy. I actually liked Romney. I thought he was a smart guy. I thought he was capable. And I liked his wife. I thought he had a good family. Everything. And here's Jindal hugged up to him, joined at the neck with him, trying to be vice president. The second Romney loses, he's the first one to sick the dogs on him.
297-5633 for a revved up Foster Campbell. 877-217-5757 after, if you're calling outside the area, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. Those are your numbers. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. An email from Leonard. He says, Jim, the governor wants to go before the Louisiana people. If he does, he should have an open exchange with our media. Foster Campbell, the governor, has been frequently on places like Fox News but and on Meet the Press, but rarely does he have an open exchange with the Louisiana media.
I'd like to answer that. Mr. Jindal doesn't like to have open communication with the press. When I was running for governor and all, he would only agree to two or three debates, and they pretty much had to be controlled like he wanted them. I know people at the Morning Advocate, he denies conversation with them all the time. So, I mean, Mr. Jindal wants to communicate with who he wants to communicate, and he likes to control the whole communication. For us, an open communication with hard questions and debates, that's not his style. I went to a meeting the other day in Monroe. He was there, and I am the Public Service Commissioner, and this was the largest telephone company in the country, one of them. They didn't ask me to speak. They asked Mr. Jindal to speak, and they asked the president of a Polish jury. I sort of was confused, you know, because surely I thought maybe they'd say, ask the Public Service Commission who regulates them to say anything. But I don't think Mr. Jindal likes adversarial or something that might be adversarial to be on the same stage with him. That's what I think. I think he likes to control the debate, and it'd be great if he would just be open and have debates like Edwin did or Romer did or Dave Treen. I mean, Dave Treen and him, they used to just tee it up, and you take your shot and he take his shot. But that's not the Jindal way. The Jindal way is let me control it and let me say what I want to say and then shut off the debate.
Did he ask you to put your big boy pants on?
No, he hasn't that. I'd like to see him on that. And I just envisioned Bobby Jindal telling somebody to put on your big boy pants and stop bedwetting. I just can't see that could come out of his mouth, but I guess it did since he wrote it.
Laverne in Mid-City. Laverne, you're on the air with Commissioner Foster Campbell.
Foster, this is Laverne, and I'm a grew up in Bossier Parish at the table of the late James Wellborn. I think he was a mutual friend of both of ours.
Yeah, I know James well. He was a teacher, and I liked him. He was an outspoken guy, but he was honest.
Yeah, he sure was, just like you. And I want to hear your thoughts on the future of the Democratic Party in Louisiana. Specifically, what you think young folks might bring to the table and hopefully grow the party a little bit?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm deeply troubled by the Democratic Party in Louisiana. I hope we have new leadership. I hope there's some invigoration. But you know what? I find, and I might be wrong, I find most young folks are going to be independent. And they don't like either party, and it's both our fault, because I think we argue way, way too much, especially in Washington. I think things are right. People don't want to call it right. They're just controlled by the special interest, like we talked about the oil company situation. Everybody knows the oil companies have used the state of Louisiana. No one wants to ask them to do anything because they got all the politicians in their back pocket. I think young people would like to see some independence and try to see some openness. And if we're just going to argue about everything that one party puts up, they're against it automatically, and all this kind of crazy stuff, I think that's what's hurting us in the Democratic Party. I think, and the Republican Party are losing young folks, too. I think most of the young folks now think they're independent.
Colin in Shreveport. Colin, you're on the air with Foster Campbell. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
You want to start the energy efficiency program again, right?
I sure do.
I'm just not in favor of taking my money and giving it to someone else. If you start an energy efficiency program, all you're going to do is raise the price on everything. And to take money from me and give it to somebody else is plain wrong.
Colin, you live in Shreveport?
Yeah, he does.
Okay. Well, I look at it another way. I think it saves money in the long run. Energy efficiency is something that the companies, by the way, want to do that to encourage people to not waste energy. And if it might be as little as a nickel a month or 50 cents a month, but I think it's money well spent, because if we save energy, we don't have to build power plants. And when we build power plants, you really get charged then. When the companies say, oh, we got to have another power plant because we got to supply all the energy users, if we used our head a little bit and we were able to help people put stuff around their doors or go in and counsel them to say, look, you know, you turn your air conditioner down when you leave or up when you leave, and when you come in, do that, or wash clothes at night, or whatever you want to do when the peak load's not on. I think it's good sense, but I do understand how you don't want to pay for somebody else. But that's what you're doing right now. What we're doing every time these people build these big power plants, they charge it to you. And some of these power plants could be avoided by conserving energy, I hope. So I think it's a good investment over the long run, but I certainly appreciate your question.
Carl downtown. Carl, you're on the air with Foster Campbell. Carl?
Hi there. Yes, I'm Carl Robigo.
Yes, sir.
I'm actually calling in because I'm traveling from Texas to join folks here in Louisiana for the next couple of days talking about solar energy. The commission has got a proceeding going on relating to net metering and the kinds of rules and costs and encouragement that the state is going to be giving to clean rooftop solar energy.
There's a vote coming this week, right?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Mr. Campbell, you know the details better, of course, than me, but it is scheduled for a hearing on Wednesday, I believe.
All right. Thank you, Carl. Commissioner Campbell, a vote?
I'm for solar energy, just like I'm for energy efficiency. It's the same principle. If you have people that want to put solar panels on their roof and they want to generate more electricity than they need, I think the company ought to buy it back from them. And what that's doing is that, here we go again, if we don't do something like that, and when they reach capacity, they come to the commission and they say, we want to build $2 billion power plant and we want to charge it to our customers and everything's fine. As a commission, our job is to regulate monopolies. And I am sure that energy doesn't want solar power. And I'm sure that CLECO doesn't want it, and neither does SWEPCO, because they want to sell you all the electricity, all your electricity. They'd like to sell it. They forget to tell you now that, by the way, we're a monopoly, and we don't want anybody infringing on that monopoly at all. We want to sell everything in Baton Rouge, you know, from Gonzales all the way up to Ethel, Louisiana, whatever their territory is, all over your part of the country down there. We're selling the electricity. We don't want anybody to generate any electricity because, you know, down the road, that's going to take away from our load, and it's just going to hurt. But I don't buy that. I think solar is clean. I'm for wind power. I'm for solar power. I'm for water power. I'm for every kind of power there is that we can generate and keep the environment clean. Solar is a good thing, and Louisiana has got a good program. And I don't want to go back to the days where we're stuck in the mud with Mississippi, or we're afraid to do this because the special interests don't want us to do it. So with them 100%.
On this vote, you and Lambert Boissier, the two Democrats, are likely to be for solar power. The three Republicans may not agree with you. I know at least two of them don't. So how does it shape up right now?
Well, I think you pretty much have it. I think Mr. Boissier will be together, and probably the three Republicans won't be with us. I don't know that. Maybe Mr. Angel might be. I think he's pretty open to it. But I know Mr. Holloway is opposed to a lot of it, and so is Mr. Scametta. But I think we're way, way too early in the process. We're premature for us to start putting up roadblocks right now, and that's exactly what we'd be doing. The program just got started, and to kill it now or to cripple it now would be wrong. And I just don't see, and a lot of people invested a lot of money in these solar things, and now what you're going to tell them, you know, or wanting to, you can't do it. We changed the program. I think it's way, way too premature to change the program, so I'm for leaving it alone.
All right, Carl, who called in from the Alliance for Affordable Energy. Carl, did you have anything else to say to Commissioner Campbell?
Well, it's actually interesting about this because I think you're right that we need everywhere, not just Louisiana, but all around the country, we need more clean energy, and solar is a perfect example of that. It comes in at the place where the power need is greatest. It works best when the power need is most acute during the hot daytime when all our air conditioners are on. It's also important, as I understand it, Louisiana's got a great system already in place. It's got rules about this, and it's got regulations, and it has resulted in the emergence of an industry that's producing lots of jobs in this state. And what's a little bit confusing about the proceeding is the fact that without really having looked at sort of all the benefits that solar can bring to Louisiana utilities and Louisiana customers, that there's a move afoot to try to undo it. And our concern, I'm on behalf of the Renewable Energy Industry Association here in this region, I'm appearing, but I get involved in this around the country. It just plain up doesn't make any sense.
All right. I'm sure the commissioner is in accord with the sentiments expressed by Carl. Roberto says, wouldn't the cost of fueling the governor's helicopter for personal travel help subsidize part of the bus transit between Baton Rouge and New Orleans?
I don't know. I know he uses it. But, hey, look, all the governors use a helicopter. I don't know how much he uses it. I understand he uses it quite a bit. But, as far as that, some of the cuts to LSU and this, that's minuscule. But whatever he does, if he flies around and wants to be seen in all 64 parishes, more power to him. I don't know when he comes up here, but I don't get invited to his deals, and it's not sour grapes. He doesn't want me on stages where he is because I might would ask him a question. I heard him up in Monroe. He said that we have stopped the outward migration of people in Louisiana. That is over. I couldn't ask him a question because I wasn't invited to be on the stage by the man who was the president of CenturyTel up there. He didn't want me to ask his governor any questions because they were going to get a big $13 million deal from him. I don't blame him. I would just ask him, Governor, I hear you talking, but would you explain to these people how, if we're not losing folks, why we got 6 congressmen now instead of 8? I mean, you sure you got an answer for that?
All right. Gary writes, who paid for the governor's travels on behalf of the Republican Party?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure the Republican Party did. I don't know who did it.
But he brings state police people with him and support personnel. Does the Republican Party pay for that as well?
I don't know. I know, but if he wants to put on his big boy pants, why does he need all the state policemen around him? If you got your big boy pants on, maybe you could sort of just take one instead of a flock of them. I don't know.
I think you'll rue the day you ever used that term around Foster Campbell.
Well, around anybody. I mean, here's a little fellow, a nice little guy, weighs a little fellow, and you talk about putting on your big boy pants. That's ought to use something else.
were you next to him last week? I know you were debated him in 2007. You've been next to him. He's not a midget.
No. I didn't say he was a midget. But I'll be honest with you now. I know what you're asking. I did look at his shoes, and they are elevated. So I just wondered, if you want to talk about being a big boy and all, he wears cowboy boots, and I think they have a lift in them. That's what I thought. Because all of a sudden, he's taller one day than he is the next day. But if I'm wrong, I apologize. But I just, a lot of people do that. I don't know. I just sort of said, if you're going to talk macho and you're going to be a tough guy.
You've never done that? You never done that, Commissioner?
What's that, talk tough?
No. Well, I know you talk tough, but wear lifts in your shoes.
No, I don't wear lifts in my shoes. And a lot of people do, and that's fine. But I'm talking about a guy that wants to be macho. If you're going to be macho, just be macho. But, and it's really not a good thing. Being nice to everybody is the best way, but you can't always be that way, I understand. But to write these tough things about quit bedwetting and put on your big boy pants, and, I just see him, and I don't know about that. I'm sort of chuckle a little bit.
All right, Tucker in New Orleans. Tucker, good morning. You're on with Foster Campbell. Hi, Tucker.
Good morning. Good morning, Commissioner. How are
you? Good morning.
We just
I have a good friend. Tucker, yes. You got a good name. I have a great friend, and his name is Tucker Melanson. He's a judge, and he's one of the finest men I know. He's from Bunky, so I'm glad to hear talk to somebody named Tucker.
Well, good name. Well, I appreciate that. I'm just calling on behalf of the solar energy industry here in Louisiana. I'm the president of our regional trade association here, and we just finished a very lengthy legislative session, and a lot of the industries were under attack. Various fiscal hawks were looking out, for the interest of the people, and I appreciate that. And solar was reaffirmed as an energy industry that is wanted in the state of Louisiana. We have new legislation that we crafted that we voluntarily offered to sunset our program at the end of 2017. We work with legislators. We work with the administration. And I just wanted to comment on what you talked about with the utilities. You know, given the chance, our industry is growing. We have over 1,000 full-time jobs in the state of Louisiana, good-paying jobs, and growing, and our industry is booming.
All right. Your response, Commissioner Campbell?
I'm with you. I'm with you, and Tucker, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm not about to shut you down in your infancy, and only people I hear complaining about this are the companies. And here's a company that's got all the business in Baton Rouge, and no one can interfere with them. And come on, and now they want to make sure that somebody can't chip away a little bit of that business. I mean, how greedy can you be? I think it's all about greed. I think it's about these companies that want all the business. They got a monopoly, and they don't want anybody to touch them. You know, and here's the deal, too, Tucker. Think about this. Here are these companies. Energy's making 10.75 rate of return. Cleco, 11.2. Now, if you want to touch them, what we really ought to be worried about at the Public Service Commission is not 0.001% of the people. All five of us ought to be trying to reduce the rate of return these companies are making, and I can't get anybody to help me with that. I don't think Cleco deserves 11.5% when you can get 0.6% on your money at a bank. They're borrowing that money cheap, 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 but they don't want to reduce the rate of return they've been making for years. So this is all a ruse, if you ask me, because everybody's worried about solar, but why aren't we worried about the meat and potato issues? That's rate of return. That's what we ought to be talking about. You do reduce the rate of return, and you give everybody a break on the utilities.
All right. The governor, last Friday, right at the close of business, he made some vetoes, deleting money for the disabled, the arts, and some other matters as well. And, of course, has drawn criticism. They stripped money from children's clinics, family violence programs. Those are tough calls governors have to make, aren't they, Commissioner Campbell?
Yeah, they are. And I don't know all the details. I don't know all the details of what he vetoed. But when you start... when you're hitting people those are pretty much voiceless people, people that don't have any political voice. And when you start hitting those folks, that's tough. Just like we did with the jailhouse phones of people, families who have people incarcerated, they don't have a voice. Nobody listens to them. They should be, because they're people and they have as much right as anybody else. But
we'll talk more with Commissioner Foster Campbell when we return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing. A few more minutes with Commissioner Foster Campbell, and then we'll hear from Drew Boyd, author of Inside the Box, A Proven System of Creativity for Breakthrough Results. You've been sticking your neck on the block for about 37 years now. It started the day you were inaugurated as a state senator back in 1976. You ever get tired of tilting at these windmills, Foster Campbell?
Yeah, you do. But, hey, sometimes it pays off. It pays off a lot of times. I mean, I personally like to do what I think is right. And if I'm the only one out there on that side and I think it's right, I can live with it. I couldn't live with doing something I didn't think was right just to go along to get along. I never will forget the gentleman that used to write for the Times-Picayune. He's passed away now. You know who I'm talking about?
Jack Wardlaw?
Yeah, Jack asked me that question one time. Well, all you're doing is tilting at windmills. I said, really, Jack? I said, well, when we got the tobacco settlement, I got $1 billion for the Louisiana Educational Excellence Fund, LEAF, $1 billion. Now, what do you think about that, Jack? I was out there before anybody, and I fought, and Mike Foster wasn't for it, and we did this and that, but I prevailed. So yeah, he didn't say anything about it. He kept on. He's talking about the oil and gas tax. You're just tilting at windmills. I said, well, you know, it's amazing. You are a reporter. You ought to be out there helping because, I mean, you know that these oil companies have abused this state. But, yeah, it gets lonesome sometimes, but that's the way I feel. And I don't mean to be offensive to people mm-hmm. and call people out, but, I mean, somebody needs to do something. I mean, are we just happy to be 49th? Are we just happy to be first in poverty and health problems and education problems and the roads are deteriorating? And you hear all these guys, all these politicians making these lofty speeches about we've stopped the outward migration in Louisiana, when he knows and I know that having six congressmen is not good. If you had eight and you lose them because of population, somebody needs to stop these folks in the tracks, you know. And everybody down there had a big fit about the well blowout two summers ago. And they wanted to be on television and the BP, boy, that was terrible. But they don't want to say, you know what, that was terrible, but it's not half as terrible as us losing our coastline. And we all know how we lost our coastline, but just to be honest, we don't have the courage to fight the oil companies or just to take up for the people of Louisiana to get our fair share from the oil companies. We'd rather go to Washington and get the money from Washington. And by the way, we want to cuss Obama every breath. He's the president. We want to cuss all the Democrats every breath. And by the way, we want the money to come back down here in Louisiana where we can be snug and say we got a bunch of money.
All right.
It doesn't work that way. And I hopefully I'm not a hypocrite. I'm sure everybody has some hypocrisy in them. But it sure would be nicer if we had politicians that wasn't owned by the special interest and wasn't downright hypocrites.
We're short on time, but Mark asked a question that I haven't talked to you about in a while. 25 years ago, you had your accident. You almost died.
I did.
How did that shape the politician and public servant you are?
Well, you know, I had a wreck, and I crushed all the bones in my face. And I had I don't mean graphic. I was down on my cheek, and I had a torn retina in the other one. For 2 days, they thought I was going to be blind. I was on the wrong road. And I was on my way to see Buddy Romer. Donnie Kelly had lined up a meeting for me to go see Buddy Romer down at the Capitol, and I was late, and so I just got on I-49 to make up the time. Everybody had been using it. But anyway, I'm just glad to be alive, and I really don't – I wish I had my other eye, but I don't miss it. I mean, I was lucky. I had great surgery. You can't hardly tell it. But it just I still have the same resolve. I'd like to see Louisiana be a great state. I'd like for the politicians in Louisiana to take up for the people and quit catering to the special interest. And I'd like to see more courage to speak out and quit worrying about getting elected or whatever. But that's not just a problem here in Louisiana. It's a problem all over Washington. Nobody wants to speak out because of special interest unelect you or whatever, but I've been here. I've been blessed. I've been 37 years in politics. I'm going to run again, but I'm not changing any of my ways. If I offend somebody, I apologize, but I try to speak from the heart, and if they're offended by that, so be it.
Well, as tough as that accident was and the comeback from it, and also, by the way, you lost a congressional seat by 1,300 votes, probably because of the accident.
Absolutely.
I would imagine what you went through earlier this year, losing your oldest child, is much more difficult.
Absolutely. I hope that never happens to anyone. I had a wonderful son, Zach, and Zach was born when I got elected. He was 37 years old. He suffered from manic depression. Zach was at LSU in biochemistry, making top grades, ready to go to medical school. I have a son, Peter, right under Zach, who's a neurosurgeon. Zach was actually a better student than Peter. But anyway, Zach came down with this manic depression about 18 years ago, and he suffered and suffered and suffered. And depression or mental illness is by far the most debilitating disease that you can have. It affects the whole family. If you had cancer, you go to MD Anderson, you'd get the best treatment you can get. But when you have mental illness, terrible mental illness, it's no help. really readily available. They do the best they can, but you have to live with it, and he just couldn't stand it anymore. And so I don't like to hear people talk about cutting mental illnesses, things like that, because they're the first people to get cut because they have no big voice, people with disabilities like that. They don't have a voice, and really makes me sick as the people talk about people, street people. Well, if they wanted to go to work, they could get off their rear end and go to work. They don't have to live on the street. Listen, people who live on the street, most of them suffer from mental illness. They don't like to be on the street sleeping on a piece of cardboard and dirty. They don't like that. But they're mentally ill. Most of them are mentally ill, and they can't help it. And we don't have the facilities to stop that, and we should. But you got to have a governor, and you got to have a legislature that puts that way up instead of at the down where the cuts can occur. But anyway, thank you for asking about Zach. He was a quarterback and played baseball. He went to Louisiana school, and he was just full of life and everything, but he just couldn't shake. He couldn't shake this terrible depression that he had. And like he told me once, he said, "Dad, I've been at the top of the hill. It's hard to just settle with mediocrity." He was, you know, he did all the math and the biochemistry, worked with Dr. Bazan down at the Neuroscience Center in New Orleans, and he couldn't get back to where he wanted to be. And it was a terrible situation. Thank you for asking.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing your story. And I met Zach a few times. He was quite a young man. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Take care, and let's talk soon.
All right.
Take care. 297-5633 is your number as we switch gears, and we're joined by Drew Boyd, a 30-year industry veteran, retired from Johnson & Johnson 3 years ago after a career in marketing, mergers, acquisitions, and international management. He has authored, along with Jacob Goldenberg, Inside the Box, a proven system of creativity for breakthrough results. Good morning, Drew Boyd.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. You say creativity can be simple and systematic.
We do. We surprise people with this message that innovation is a skill. It's not a gift. It's not something you're born with. It's a skill that you can learn like any other skill, whether it's in business or learning a new sport or playing a musical instrument.
Well, most of us think of creativity as something outside the box. Obviously, your title would indicate you might think otherwise. It's the title of the book is Inside the Box.
Yeah, that's the surprise of this book, too. It's an interesting thing about outside the box thinking. That notion was based on flawed research done in the 70s by a researcher named Guilford. And what most people don't know, even though they use this term all the time, is that two other research studies replicated the work by Guilford around this outside-the-box thinking idea. And what they found is that giving people this notion to think outside the box doesn't improve creativity at all. In fact, what it does is it puts people sort of on a wild cognitive goose chase for a great idea in a very unconstrained space. And what our work shows, what this research shows, is that you're going to be more creative by tightly constraining the mind inside the box using a set of structured steps. And that what that does is it actually makes the brain work harder and more productive, more efficient to find breakthrough ideas.
So the traditional view is that creativity is unstructured, doesn't follow rules or patterns. You say that's all wrong.
Here's the thing about patterns. For thousands of years, inventors, everyday innovators, have used patterns in their inventions, usually without even realizing it. In doing so, those patterns are now embedded into the products and services you see around you. Almost think of them as the DNA of a product or service. And what this method that we describe in the book does is allows you to extract that DNA, take that pattern, and reapply it to the products and services that you want to innovate in a systematic way. There are five particular patterns that show up over and over again when you see these in the products around you. And what people can do is take these patterns, these techniques that we describe in the book, and apply them anytime they want.
Drew Boyd is the guest. The book is Inside the Box, a proven system of creativity for breakthrough results. three of the techniques. It sounds like a math class: subtraction, division, multiplication. What do you mean?
So it's not math related, but what those techniques do, like all five of them, is they take a product or service and change its configuration, morph it into something that at first may not even seem recognizable. So the division technique, for example, would take a component of a product, divide it out of the product, and rearrange it somewhere else back into the product or in the immediate vicinity. And what that does is it gives the mind a starting point, a configuration. We call it a solution for which it then has to work backwards to the problem that it solves or the benefit that it delivers. This notion of going instead of from the problem to the solution, instead going now from the solution to the problem, it turns out humans are actually better at that direction of innovation. So, Jim, I want you to imagine I'm holding in my hand a baby's milk bottle.
Okay.
The baby's milk bottle changes color when the temperature of the milk changes. So I want to ask you, why would that be beneficial?
Well, I'm learning something that I didn't know. So it's something that I would apply if I encountered this on the next occasion. So I would use that as a template for what comes next.
So exactly right. The idea of patterns is to replicate. In this particular case, a baby color-changing milk bottle would be very useful for the mother to know when it's too hot to feed the milk to the baby. And what this idea does is, if I were to ask people instead to think of ways not to burn a baby with milk that's too hot, it would take people a very long time to come up with on their own a color-changing milk bottle. What our five techniques do is it allows you to create a configuration like that, and that's the starting point for innovation, taking these hypothetical solutions that the five techniques create and then work backwards to the problem that they solve or the benefit they deliver.
Well, most people, Drew, think the way to innovate is to start with a problem and try to think of solutions, but you advocate just the opposite of that. Why?
That's the one of the core ideas in this method, is that people have a very difficult time thinking of ideas other than those what they already have in their head. Just sitting down and asking somebody to brainstorm with wild ideas, very divergent way, is a very low yield, very inefficient, and unproductive. And research has shown that for the last 50 years. When you give people a tightly constrained configuration, start with this idea of the solution, they're much more productive, much more fluid at going in that direction cognitively. And that's what the method does. It walks people down a series of steps, how to use their brain in a structured way to lead them to an idea.
You claim that creative people, and you mentioned Paul McCartney and Agatha Christie, they use templates for their benefit. How did they do that?
It's not just those creative people. We think every creative person, these highly creative person like Robert Frost, Paul McCartney, Agatha Christie, they use patterns in their creativity. Interestingly, they don't want people to know about it. And when I ask people why, that it's because thinking of a creative person using a template seems to take away from the creative energies, when in fact, what that pattern did is made that person even more creative. And that's the premise of the book, that it doesn't matter where your starting point is on the creativity scale. Patterns can boost your creativity, just as they did with Paul McCartney. He used a well-formed structure when he and John were writing music early in their career. Agatha Christie wrote 60-some novels, has sold more books than anyone on the planet. She used a well-defined template over and over again. How could she be so creative using the same formula over and over? Well, the results speak for themselves. What the template does is it forces her then to add very creative elements around it, working within this templated structure that she used.
Well, lastly, Drew, for those who just graduated, maybe MBAs, in a sentence or two, what advice would you give them regarding creativity?
For new graduates, the ability to walk into a company and claim that you know how to invent new products or services would be pretty exciting for a potential employer to hear. All companies know that innovation is what's going to fuel their growth. And so the crop of graduates applying for jobs should go in with this idea that they're going to be expected to produce new ideas. Companies want original thinking, not just on new products, but across the entire business. And so I urge young people to learn a method, learn to create ideas on demand.
The book is Inside the Box from Drew Boyd and Jacob Goldenberg from Simon & Schuster. Thank you, Drew, and thank you for listening every day. We'll be back tomorrow. See you then. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.